Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I mean, what's that football focus doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
As a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PFL.
Ready to get into it?
Yeah.
All right. We're going team by team.
I would be very careful about slinging stuff.
Am I going to get sued?
Are we going legal on this?
I like football. I like football season. All the things that go with it.
That's right. Not even big media can prevent PFF Brad Spielberger talking about the Chicago Bears this victory Tuesday after they get the big W against the Minnesota Vikings on Monday Night Football. We're going to hit up all that game. We're going to hit up David Tepper, the Carolina Panthers, everything that's happened there, as well as a little bit of news around the league. And to do that, we need Brad. How's it going, Brad?
Going fantastic because, you know, a very aesthetically pleasing win. You know, I think a game that a lot of people would say pushed the sport of football forward, really kind of just enlightened the rest of the league on how to play this game we love. A dominant outing by the Chicago Bears, their first win without a touchdown since 1993, and a 12-10 barn burner against the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah, and of course, by big media refusing to let you talk about it, I mean a computer in the PFF studio decided not to work, which is why I'm doing it on the lovely location of my basement, and you are still in location where you normally are. Well, let's get into that game, but first, we've got to talk about securing your family's financial future, starting with life insurance. Fabric by Gerber Life makes it quick, easy, and affordable to protect your family so you can get back to enjoying life. Fabric was designed by parents for parents to help you get a high-quality, surprisingly affordable term life insurance policy in less than 10 minutes. Fabric has flexible policies that fit your family and your budget, with quality policies like $1 million in coverage for less than a dollar a day. Get your personalized quote in minutes and then apply when it's convenient for you. It's all online and on your schedule. You can go from start to covered in less than 10 minutes with no health exam required. Join the thousands of parents who trust Fabric to protect their family. Apply today in minutes at meetfabric.com/PFFNFL. That's meetfabric.com/PFFNFL. M-E-E-T, fabric.com/PFFNFL. Policies issued by Western Southern Life Insurance Company, not available in certain states. Price is subject to underwriting and health questions. All right, Brad, as you said, it was an aesthetically beautiful performance by both teams. Spectacular football across the board. But what were your main takeaways from one of the most beautiful games of football we've ever been treated to?
A real analysis level, this was, and this isn't the Bears fan of me talking or anything like that, like the pass rush for Chicago has not looked this good since 2021. Like since there was Khalil Mack and Robert Quinn having a, you know, career resurgence year and breaking the sack record somehow in Chicago, like against a good opponent, in particular, Brian O'Neill and Christian Darrisaw at tackle. We had Montez Sweat with 7 pressures, a 25% pass rush win rate. DeMarcus Walker had 4 pressures. All of them came outside the tackles. He is kind of a guy that move inside and outside, but was winning off the edge as well. Even the rookie Javon Dexter, I think his grade, you might scratch your head at it. Bears fans might be annoyed by it. Look, his best rep may have been a roughing the passer penalty where it was a clear body weight foul. We all hate the body weight foul. I think it was kind of one of the more clear body weight sacks or non-sacks of the season, but still was getting in the backfield, had 2 other pressures beyond that. So yeah, like they were getting pressure pretty much the entire game, which has not been a thing you could say about this defensive line in years.
Yeah, this was one of those classic games where you're watching it and you're like, is this good defense or bad offense that we're watching, right? And it was actually one of the ones where it's kind of difficult to figure it out, because I think there was some good defense on both sides. Like, Minnesota had a really good handle on a lot of the short stuff that the Bears were running. They struggled at times against the run. The Bears had a lot of really nice plays, like Jalen Johnson's interception, spectacular play. He had another nice play on a dropped one that he should have had a second interception on. On the other hand, there were also a bunch of classic plays where, in particular, the Vikings were just shooting themselves in the foot repeatedly the way they've done all season long. Like, some of the turnovers were ridiculous. There were a couple of big plays that they had there for the taking and just didn't, you know, weren't able to execute. Jordan Addison in particular has been great this season, had a pretty rough game. And a lot of it was inches away from something completely different, right? There's one play where what would have been was a nice pickup, a missed tackle essentially from rookie Terrell Smith ends up being actually not a missed tackle, because the knee just touches the ground. It went from like bad missed tackle minus one type of play for Terrell Smith to actually, that's a 4-yard gain. It's a great stop. Plus 0.5. It was like a 1.5 grading swing just because his knee was like an inch from hitting the turf or not. Jordan Addison also, like, the very first play of the game, right? High points a ball, splits two DBs, can't quite come down with it, just gets knocked out before it comes. And then, of course, the really big play, the double move where Addison completely roasts, was it Kyler Gordon?
Kyler Gordon got hurt.
But, I mean, he got hurt because he played the double move badly and then like fell over trying to recover. And then Josh Dobbs just can't keep the ball in the field of play, and Addison can't quite, you know, spin around, make the contort and keep his feet in. I mean, that's a touchdown if they just keep the ball in the field, and instead the Vikings kept turning the ball over and couldn't end up making the defensive stop at the right time to stop Chicago getting the win.
Yeah, there were a lot of, I guess, those swing plays. Like, I actually thought the Addison ball you're talking about, the high point, Eddie Jackson was the guy that was mainly right there. I actually thought that was a catch. It was kind of a hard review, too many bodies, and the ball was moving a little bit, I suppose. But I actually did think that was probably a catch. The ball from Dobbs on the left sideline, like, for some reason I saw people blaming Addison for not staying in bounds. I mean, yeah, he probably could have ran the route better, or maybe, you know, just started running towards the numbers or towards the hash to just, like, convince Dobbs to throw it more in that direction. There was kind of a DB in the area, but not really. But I thought the throw was the issue more so than what Addison did on the route. But, yeah, it's a good point. I do think it was more bad offense than good defense, but I also do think both defenses did make a lot of nice plays in this game. The linebacker play was great. Ivan Pace got the sack early. T.J. Edwards had a bunch of nice defensive stops and is playing sideline to sideline well. Jermaine Evans had a couple splash plays, which is always good. And when you drop $18 million a year on a linebacker. So, yeah, like, there was a mix of both, no question about it. But at the end of the day, two quarterbacks that were under a lot of pressure, but also invited pressure and didn't navigate it particularly well at times. The one completion over the middle of the field the entire game, I think the only completion beyond 10 yards ends up being the game deciding, which was an absolute missile from Justin Fields to DJ Moore to close it out.
Yeah, the Addison catch, like, I think it was catchable. Like, I think it's possible that Addison could have sort of spun around, got the ball, kept both feet in, and, you know, done that sort of classic sideline catch thing. I think that would have been an exceptional play by Addison, though. Like, it was doable. I've seen, receivers have made that play before, and I don't think he tracked it particularly well, but it was a bad ball. And, like, what you're asking to happen is for Addison to make a great catch, and that's still, like, the problem was, if the ball is further in field, it's a touchdown. Like, forget a sideline catch for a big gain. That should have been a touchdown because the coverage fell over and the safety was nowhere. Like, if Dobbs just puts the ball anywhere on field so that Addison can catch it and not go out of bounds, it's a walk-in score. Instead, you're saying, well, technically it was catchable, but it still would have limited the play. Like, the throw was bad, right? Like, maybe Addison could have kept in field, but he doesn't need to. If the ball's thrown in field, he can then adjust in field and go catch it. The throw is the problem. Like, Dobbs just missed it, and he missed a few of them in that game. Like, they got a bit unlucky on a couple of the turnovers, but Dobbs had that game that we had been talking about that he hadn't really had, where he put the ball in harm's way a bunch of times in this game.
Yeah. I guess the best way to put it in the context is Addison didn't pull a Jonathan Mingo. And if you don't know what I'm referring to, go look that up on Twitter. I'm sure it'll pop right up on your screen. a guy who like went out of his way to run out of bounds. That's not what Addison did. So anyway, the turnover thing is important too, because I think two of the four interceptions probably were kind of fluky and not necessarily Dobbs's fault. However, Jalen Johnson probably should have had a pick six on a different play. And then we only categorized he had two more forced incompletions beyond his actual interception. We credited one, the one I'm referring to, that he probably could have house called it as a dropped int. The other was a forced incompletion, but it would have been a much tougher play. Actually, I see why we graded it that way. But you probably could argue it was a borderline dropped int as well. Dobbs definitely put the ball in harm's way. And also just like, really for him, he does play a high variance kind of crazy style. And we've seen a lot of the positive, but I thought he navigated pressure more poorly in this game than I've seen him do, you know, pretty much all year. And I think that's why you do have to give Chicago credit, because they have not broken through an offensive line with consistency like that in a very, very long time. And even when they didn't get necessarily clean pressure, they were collapsing pockets. There was always something that Dobbs had to monitor and deal with on almost every dropback that I can remember, which is going to speed up your clock and make you, you know, make some poor decisions, take some sacks, throw some errant passes, things of that nature. Like some of the bad offense, I think, was a product of prior good defense causing, you know, a little bit of calamity later on in the game.
Yeah, I mean, the Bears had 26 total pressures as a defense, which has to be the highest total they've had in a long time. They were able to get consistent pressure. And then the other weird thing about this game was at the end that the Vikings did not bring pressure. You know, like the most blitz-heavy team in the NFL basically sat back and said, let's let Justin Fields go win the game, and he did. I mean, it was sort of out of character to not get aggressive, send the house, and, you know, rely on that variance instead, just dropping back in zone and giving them the middle of the field, which they eventually took. It's the classic, like, you don't need to move very far to get a field goal. And that was the thing. They weren't playing for the touchdown. It might've made sense if the Bears had to go the whole way and put it in the end zone, but they didn't. They only needed to put it in field goal range.
It was strange. I was wondering if Flores was worried about Fields taking off and scrambling and picking up enough yardage to get them in field goal range that way. I get why DJ Moore's quote was like, I'm not even sure if he was supposed to run towards the middle of the field. I think he said, like, maybe he was. But the quote was, like, I saw a completely vacant middle of the field and just went there. And, like, Fields saw it and threw the ball. And, again, like, it's because maybe it was really establishing that pass by not throwing over the middle of the field the entire game. That kind of set up the winning play. But it was weird. For Flores, who not only brings a ton of pressure, but it was working in this game. Like, even in the Bears' scripted drive, which was – a lot of masterful Fields, he did finally get sacked to set up the missed field goal, you know, by Ivan Pace, but probably should have gotten sacked the play before that. I don't know who number 52 is. I'm in Minnesota, big fella, like got through it and kind of just lost him. Yes. So like it was working pretty much the entire game. And then, yeah, you just kind of, like you said, if they need a touchdown, I get it. When they only needed to get to the 30 or whatever, it didn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, and the weird thing about the blitzing is they had done a pretty good job of blitzing and containing Fields at the same time. Like, they were staying disciplined with when they sent five or six guys, they all stayed in the lanes. They made sure that Fields didn't have the ability to just beat one guy, bounce outside, and, you know, break off a 40-yard run. It is surprising that they just eased off in that one critical situation. Anyway, we got to move on because we're relying on a free Zoom call, and God knows how long this thing will last for. I notice there's no ticking clock either, so I can't even tell how long it's been going for. So this is a whole seat of our pants podcast we're going to have here, which means we need to get into telling everybody about Prize Picks. Now, Tyler, again, did the Prize Picks lineup for Monday night and was 0-for-3. So at the minimum, I would advise you fading the Tyler draft or the Tyler Prize Picks at this point, but apparently he's calling time on it and giving up the responsibility to somebody that might actually pick some winning selections going forward. But anyway, what you can do with Prize Picks, if you want to play along with some of Prize Picks' favorite players like rapper Meek Mill or comedian Andrew Schultz, you can now find community plays under the promos tab of the app to view entries from some of the biggest names in the Prize Picks community each week. Prize Picks also offers a reboot policy so that your entries stay in play even if one of your players gets injured. For football and basketball games, if you have a player who exits the game in the first half and does not return in the second half, that player is rebooted. Prize Picks is the only daily fantasy sports platform with an injury insurance policy. Go to prizepicks.com/PFFNFL and use the code PFFNFL for a first deposit match up to $100. Again, that's prizepicks.com/PFFNFL and use code PFFNFL for a first deposit match up to $100.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
All right, Brad, what do you make of the chaos unfolding in Carolina right now? Because it's kind of interesting. There's a great article on The Ringer by, I forget how her surname is pronounced, Nora Princiotti? Something like that.
That sounds about right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's Nora Princiotti. Let's hope it is. Maybe use a little Princiotti, like you were trying to get like a little Italian in there.
DeVito,
yeah, little,
Tommy DeVito would know.
Anyway. I mean, like... Go ahead.
Well, she wrote this article, essentially a little bit of a profile on David Tepper and how things have been going. And we're now, you know, six head coaches into this thing between David Tepper and Carolina. We've got David Tepper doing the same thing with his MLS team. This is a billionaire hedge fund owner who doesn't seem to have a lot of patience. Right. And it's just out here. Oh, we didn't. Results are bad. Next. And just sweeping house. So that part is interesting. The second part that I found fascinating was the report that the interim head coach, the special teams coach, and Jim Caldwell, as some kind of coaching advisor, came in and fired multiple other people. Like, the first thing they did was get rid of Deuce Staley and Josh McCown, who's only been at the job. Like, Josh McCown was getting head coaching interviews a minute ago, and now he's fired.
Texans hiring D'Amico Ryans over Josh McCown. We might look back on that one as quite the decision there. It's just more chaos. Like, Tepper can come out now in his press conference and say a bunch of things. And look, do I know everything for an absolute fact? I suppose not. But, you know, first he said that he did not influence the quarterback decision. Based on what I've heard, that is categorically false. he said a whole bunch of things that are just based on what everyone else says, and maybe we're all wrong, and David Tepper, you know, is the arbiter of truth, just does not align with what I've heard of the situation. So I don't think you need to have stability just for stability's sake. Like, they have not been good enough. I will admit that I was wrong. I don't think Frank Reich was a good hire in hindsight, and I thought it was a great situation, kind of building out this legacy coaching staff. Like, you mentioned Jim Caldwell, Dom Capers, like a blend of young up-and-comers with some of the old head guys that have been around for a while, a Thomas Brown, you know, in that second category, Deuce Staley in that second category. Like, I thought it made a whole lot of sense, but I mean, we even saw when the play calling duties got handed off, it still did not matter. This team is 30th in play action, 28th in pre-snap motion. They are dead last in both yards after the catch and average depth of target. And again, a lot of that certainly can be personnel's problem, but that's also a coaching issue. Like, you're not scheming up guys with heads of steam. You're not doing things to, you know, push the easy buttons for your quarterback, all of those things. So it's like, do I get the firing? Yes, but also, do I have faith at this point that David Tepper is actually going to have the patience to stick by someone who maybe is showing us a sound process, but the results aren't there? I'm not sure I have faith now that Tepper, like, here's an example. If a Dan Campbell came in and had the start that he had of the Detroit Lions, where the results were not there, they were losing games, sometimes in bad fashion, but I think even early on, it was evident that he was building that culture, ignore all that buzzword stuff. Like, I think he clearly had a vision, had a process and a plan he was going to stick to, was surrounding himself with smart people that viewed the sport differently, viewed offense and defense differently. He was willing to hand over play calling duties to Ben Johnson fairly early, et cetera, et cetera. Like, if I'm the next level prospective head coach, which probably includes a Ben Johnson, do I have faith where it's like, hey, I come in, we're 2-8 to start, but there's all this market improvement and signs of positive growth. Do I have faith that Tepper is actually going to understand that? I don't. I don't at all.
Yeah, it is an interesting sort of situation where, you know, we say a lot that one of the worst things you can do is not recognize mistakes early and just keep you know, throwing good money after bad, that kind of thing, right? So on the one hand, you sort of say, well, look, theoretically, we should be crediting him for saying, I screwed up. I hired the wrong guy. It's clearly not going to work. Frank Reich is not the guy. And you know, I think there's Frank Reich is a difficult sort of difficult coach to figure out right now, because a few years ago, he's a guy whose results have always been slightly worse generally than the sort of perception of how good he was as a coach. And when things started to unspool in Indianapolis, people were giving him the blame, but other people were saying, well, look, the situation's gone bad. There's a lot of underlying metrics that say he's doing a better job than the results are giving right now. You know, they were top 11, I think, in EPA per play the last couple of years, even with the ghost of Phillip Rivers and with Carson Wentz and with the offensive line collapsing and with only Michael Pittman as a receiver. You know, there was ways of looking at that and saying Frank Reich's actually doing a really good job. On the other hand, that offense, or his offense in particular, is skewing in the opposite direction of the way everybody else's offense is going right now, which is, you know, they don't use motion. I think they're 31st or something in use of pre-snap shifts and motions. It's not necessarily the worst thing in the world. Philadelphia is dead ass last and they have a good offense, right? That tree does that. They're also way at the top of 11 personnel usage, which again is not necessarily inherently bad. The Rams are, the Bengals are always high in that. So it's a schematic thing. But when you don't have good wide receivers, using three of them on the field every snap doesn't feel like a great plan, right? So you're kind of on the one hand looking at this and saying, well, there are things that say Frank Reich's performance has been going down for a few years, and evidently he's not helping the situation right now, right? Whatever about how bad it is and whether or not it's savable, whatever he's doing, which is not much, is not helping anything. Like, they're not trying to find these little edges or cheat codes or right. just ways of helping out Bryce Young and the bad receivers and the bad offensive line. It's just like, let's just run the offense and hope it gets better, which is, I think, generally a bad thing. So on the one hand, you're looking at Tepper and saying, actually, this feels like the right move to get rid of the guy, even though it's early, even though he now gets thrown into like the Urban Meyer bucket of guys that we had to get rid of immediately because it was so apparent it wasn't going to work. Nathaniel Hackett, et cetera. The problem is, though, it's now part of this pattern for David Tepper, which is knee-jerk, reactionary, like, get rid of it, clean house, it's not working, axe it, right? And at that point, if that's the automatic response, it's never going to work because almost nobody comes in and immediately it's great. Like, if this is the sort of standard of, I need this to be fixed next week, then we're just going to do this cycle over and over and over again. It's like, I'm sort of torn between, on the one hand, I can see a case here. You can construct a very good case that says this is a smart thing to do. This is the right move. You're getting ahead of it. You're, you know, cutting out the dead flesh before it all necrotizes and your entire leg falls off. On the other hand, like, that shouldn't be your MO, right? That's kind of like a last resort, not an automatic default position.
Right. It's also not in a vacuum, and not that like NFL right. players or coaches ever care about the MLS, but like, I think Tepper also had a coach make the playoffs last year and then got off to a slow start and he fired him this year too. So it's like, it's just emblematic of a larger overall issue. You know, and I'll say this too, going into the whole conversation of how hands-on he is, and Frank Reich's answer in that press conference is like all time, especially now in hindsight, where he's like, some owners are hands-off, some are not. And like, he looks like the most defeated man on planet Earth. You know, and so nothing about this week is surprising. You talk to people that are prospective general managers and head coaches in this league, or the agents that represent them, or even lower level guys that want to aspire to that someday. And you say, what is the number one thing that is most important to you making a decision? You and I would probably guess, the average person would guess, all right, who's the quarterback? What's the salary cap situation like? What's the draft pick arsenal like? Like, name a bunch of things. How involved and how hands-on is the owner? Is the number one answer from 95% of people you talk to when you have this conversation. I'm not making that up. That's based on dozens, if not hundreds of conversations over the last 5 years I've been doing this. And I'm not saying you can't be hands-on. I guess I've become like a Jerry Jones defender. Jerry Jones, of course, is involved. He's very hands-on. He wants to have a say. He wants to influence decisions. There probably are some draft picks here and there where he's kind of put his foot on the table and stamped it. However, there is clearly times where Will McClay and the football staff in Dallas are allowed to say, you know what, Jerry, you're wrong. Like, we got this. Trust our track record. Let us do what we're here to do. Like, another good example, too, is like Jed York even admitted himself, I believe, in the early days of San Francisco with the Niners. Like, he just tried to be too influential and sway too many decisions. And when he finally hired Kyle Shanahan, brought in a John Lynch, and just said, you guys figure it out. You guys do it. Parag Marathe, the president, all the guys that are there that have built out this kind of, you know, infrastructure. Look where we are. They have maybe the most talented roster in the NFL. So it's just like, until Tepper shows some signs of not meddling to the degree that he is right now, it's not an attractive spot to be, because then you also do factor in they don't have a first round pick this year or a second round pick in 2025. The first round pick very well could be the number one overall pick in the draft. They're not in a good cap situation. They still continue to spend. They're spending from the end of the Cam Newton era to now, looked like a team that thought they were competitive in each subsequent year. They never actually tore this thing down. And so now it's like, these guys aren't bad, but like, you sign a Hayden Hurst, Devon Bell, like, you add all these pieces because you think you're close. No, newsflash, you're horrendous. And so it's like, they're so far away. If I'm Ben Johnson, I don't even take an interview with them.
Yeah, so let's spin this ahead to, you know, what the solution is, what the coaching candidates are now. Because like you said, it's not, you know, the typical destination where it's forget Bryce Young, forget the roster, forget all those things. It's like, now we have this pattern of, you have a very short leash here. This owner has now fired multiple guys pretty quickly, and you know that this might not be a long-term gig for you. Like, this is your very quick shot. Now, it's not the same as a job offer for you and I, right? Like, this is, if you get fired, you're still going home with your $30 million, right? It's not the worst thing in the world. But for a Ben Johnson, say, right? Like, if this is your first shot at it, it might be a 1 year shot, and then you're fired and you've got to go and rebuild and, you know, start over and like earn the gig again. Right now, if you're, I don't know, a different, you know, older head coach who maybe has had multiple shots and is just looking for either another one or the retirement payday, this is a better option than that. But like, so what does that leave us with? Cause Ben Johnson was apparently in this sort of job cycle the last time around and withdrew himself, right, to stay one more year in Detroit. You've got to assume he's not interested at all now, because the situation is worse than it was when he turned it down the first time. So who is interested in this job?
Yeah, it's a good point. So I do think the guys you just highlighted, and the name that jumps out to me, if he just maybe doesn't get other opportunities, and if Carolina is willing to give him his shot, is like an Eric Bieniemy type, right? Like when Vic Fangio took the Denver job, or, you know, Wink Martindale, probably because of how bad the Giants are, isn't probably going to get some of those interviews like he has in the past. But this is like unfair and unfortunate that Bieniemy has to get lumped into this, you know, group, but because I think he's done some good in Washington, no question about it. But like, that's more the guy that I think would be more realistic. But again, you know, there's still the threat of, okay, this guy is older and doesn't work, so I'm just going to throw him to the curb. But like you said, all right, go cry into your pile of $30 million and buyout dollars, and you'll be okay. But yeah, like the Ben Johnson, Brian Johnson in Philly, Mike McDonald in Baltimore, like those up and coming mid 30s level dudes that want to go somewhere, build out a whole situation. Like, even looking at Jonathan Gannon in Arizona, I think he knew, and not that ownership is viewed in the most positive light there either, but I think there was an understanding of, this team is not going to be remotely competitive the first year we are here, but we are going to build long-term and think long-term. And look, Jonathan Gannon had a lot of interest across the NFL, almost was a Houston Texans head coach as well. A lot of teams were very interested in his services. I just don't know if those guys are going to take it. I think it is more what you're referring to, but like, Frank Reich is that bucket as well. And here we are.
What do you think that Tepper's ideal candidate would look like? Because he's now done sort of young up and comer. Now, admittedly, it was college, so not necessarily, you know, but he's done that sort of side of things. He's also done the sort of aging retread, safe pair of hands type of thing. And they've both been either disasters or, you know, terminated shortly by him. So like, would he want to go into the, who's the hot young offensive coordinator, the Ben Johnson who probably isn't interested, but like PFF Bobby, you know, is he looking at that type of coach? Or is he like, what's the single biggest like splash legacy hire I can find? Like, can I tempt Bill Belichick here? I think was a name on in Nora's article. Like, is he looking at that side of things? Where would he be, do you think?
I do think he likes offense. I think, you know, like when he does decide to like actually listen to, you know, some data and research, like I think he is a believer you should try to have an offensive head coach, you know, which I think is a fair argument. We all understand the reasons why people argue that. So I think it would be one of those up and comers, although I will say maybe he skews towards now, like Ben Johnson is still a rather inexperienced guy. So maybe you try to get someone who is a little bit more like a Shane Waldron, who's now been in New England, LA, Seattle, has worked for different organizations, has worked with different quarterbacks, done different things. I know Seattle's offense is kind of sputtering right now. I still think that the play design and sequencing has been fine. You know, I just seen some injuries and I don't know. Anyway, so maybe you go more that direction, or like you mentioned, yes, let's make a trade for a guy who has a high floor just to get some credibility back in this organization, just to raise kind of the culture and everything. And then maybe that guy can pass the torch to, you know, the guy that can push you to actual heights, as opposed to just like trying to get back to being respectable. Yeah, a Belichick is obviously the name that jumps to the top. I don't know who else would fall in that category. Like the Andy Reid Kansas City thing, it's in hindsight, it's funny. Like that's probably not going to happen again for a very, very long time, that a four-time, you know, conference championship reaching coach is available for a non-trade signing. Like it's a rarity for a reason.
Yeah, I mean, I think teams have figured out now it's Belichick, right? Like if the only way that happens is if they decide it's time to just get rid of Belichick rather than trade him for something, and Belichick ends up available on the open market. But generally speaking, teams are not letting go of coaches with that kind of track record, because I think they've understood better now that the David Tepper approach is generally not the right one. And if you have a coach that has a proven track record of deep playoff success, you don't get rid of that guy just because there's a bad season that comes down the line somewhere, right? Like the 1 year should not be enough to make you erase the entire resume that guy has brought to the table and get rid of him.
Yeah. No. And I think like at this point too, he's probably thinking of just like, how can I get fans engaged and like just do things back at a base core level of just like, you know, just, I don't know, I keep using the word respectable and whatever, like credible, but like it's gotten really bad. Like Carolina is not an easy place to have NFL support as it is. I probably told this story, I don't know if on these airwaves, but like my freshman roommate in college from South Carolina, it was like, not a soul I know cares about the Panthers. They care about the Gamecocks or the Tigers. Like it's not an easy place to just like have a groundswell of support. Yeah, it's football country, but I think it's college football country. So yeah, like I think he tried to take a shot with Rule. I then think he maybe overcorrected with a Reich, and now maybe you land somewhere in the middle, or yeah, you get into a bidding war. The Commanders, Josh Harris and David Tepper bidding against each other for Bill Belichick's services this offseason would be fantastic.
That would be amazing. But it is interesting though that like the college to pro coach thing hasn't had a great track record, but maybe the way to do it is to go after those, you know, offensive coordinators from the right system that's currently, you know, setting the league on fire. Just pick up the next guy in the line, because the track record of those guys is pretty good. And even if you are going for an inexperienced name.
One more we should have mentioned. Jim Harbaugh. What about that?
Jim Harbaugh. That would be a splash as well. Like that's a big play. I like that. I like it.
And I think. Yeah. And I think Harper would say like, look, you got to let me run this entire ship. I don't want to hear a word from you about what to do football wise. And maybe he's willing to do that. So yeah, that's not my new pick. That's my choice.
He's also got enough credit in the bank that it probably doesn't matter to him if the guy comes in and, you know, cleans house in a year's time. Like, okay, it wouldn't be a good career resume note for him, but it's not like it would ruin his reputation. It would just be, Tepper's done it again. Now I just go back, you know, somewhere else and continue a great career or whatever. Like it wouldn't be the sort of ruination for him that it might for other coaches.
Good point. It's a good point. He played there in 2001, which I definitely just Googled as we were talking. So he's got a connection to the building. You can have the second consecutive former quarterback of the organization come in and be the head coach. But no, like I think like you said, it's also a good point. If he has to then bounce back to, you know, go to college or do something else, I think he really wants to be in the NFL at this point, and probably deserves it, frankly. But yeah, that's a splash that doesn't require draft picks in a trade. And I think it's also a guy that would be open to the challenge of, like,
yeah,
he actually, unlike the Ben Johnsons of the world, where I'm saying, well, why would they want to go there? I feel like Harbaugh would be like, yeah, I'm going to come in. We have no draft capital. We have no cap space. The roster stinks. And I'm going to come in and just, like, you know, eat meat and yell at people until we're good. Like, that's, I think it makes sense.
I would also buy, I would buy Jim Harbaugh having a sort of higher level of optimism for Bryce Young than maybe some guys that just watched the NFL season closely and were like, I'm terrified of Bryce Young now. Jim Harbaugh still thinks of Bryce Young as the dude from Alabama that was amazing, right? Like, I would say of all the prospective coaches, he would have the highest view of Bryce Young simply because of where he is in the world and the kind of tape that he's exposed to on a more regular basis. All right, we've got 5 minutes left before this thing shuts down. So let me quickly touch on Shaquille Leonard, linebacker for the Indianapolis Colts, gets released, gets let walk early rather than in the offseason, and clears waivers, right, because his contract was onerous. But now that he's cleared waivers, the Dallas Cowboys are emerging as the most interested team in Leonard's services. What do you make of that move, potential move?
Yeah, so real quick, just people saying why this happened. Very simple. $6.5 million injury guarantee in 2024 is why that happened. So I think Dallas does make a ton of sense. Looks like Leighton Vander Esch probably out for the year now. They've had a bunch of injuries at that position, even dating back to DeMarvion Overshown, their third round pick before the season began. I think they make a ton of sense. However, if it doesn't get done there, if Kyle Shanahan puts Zach Cunningham and those guys in a blender this Sunday, which he does to most off-ball linebackers, even the very, very good coverage backers, maybe they get in the conversation. I don't think Leonard is the same guy he once was, but I think he's a better, you know, coverage player than the current Eagles linebackers, who really are meant to just be run stuffers, guys that play forward. I think it's those two. I think they probably get, not a bidding war, but they need the position the most. They are clear-cut top four teams in the conference, and I think it could make a lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point to make that Leonard is not, like, Leonard at his best was an all-pro caliber guy. He was maybe the best ball hawk linebacker in the league. He was incredible in coverage. Injuries have absolutely, I don't want to say ruined the guy because he's still out there playing, but they have really taken their toll. Last season, obviously, was pretty much injured for the entirety of it. This season, his overall grade is 60.3, which is down like 20 grading points on what he used to do. His coverage grade is at 56.4. So again, that's down 30 points over what it was at his very best. And he has zero plays on the football in terms of interceptions, pass breakups, forced incompletions, nothing. Like, the ball has been going into his coverage. It's been getting caught, and he hasn't been making the plays that he's typically made. So the question, if you're Dallas or if you're Philadelphia, is what can he get back, right? Like, if we get him healthy, if he continues to sort of work, and maybe we don't need him on the field right away, but in January, what can he be? Like, can he actually get to anywhere near the player that he used to be? Or are we just buying the declined, the broken version of a guy that used to be great?
The interesting thing there is the defenses we're talking about. Like, if you go to a Dallas, if you're playing behind a better defensive line than you have in a while in Indianapolis, you know, DeForest Buckner and Grover Stewart is probably a decent interior to play behind as a linebacker. But, you know, Dallas is better. Philly also better. You know, the secondary is definitely better than Indianapolis is. Obviously, the Colts or the Eagles secondary isn't great, but I think that would help him. Like, he would have to go from being the guy that's expected to make splash plays and 18 tackles a game to, like, hey, you're going to have a specialized role as a will linebacker that we're going to play 40 instead of 70 snaps a game. And you're supposed to cover number three receivers, tight ends and backs out of the backfield sometimes. Like, I think those teams would put him in a position to succeed. That would work. I think it's an interesting move. Like, I part of getting released is because he's not quite the same guy because the injuries have taken their toll. But also, like I said, in my opinion, it's pretty straightforward. They didn't want to lock in guaranteed money for next year, which is not a concern for the teams that we're now talking about.
Yeah, I mean, it was going to – everyone expected it to happen in the offseason. They just decided, let's do it early because of this injury guarantee, and, like, let's not run the risk. There's no point in it. All right, that'll do it for our show today. Hopefully, we'll be back tomorrow. Hopefully, we'll be back in the studio tomorrow, but that relies on a computer getting fixed, so we'll see. Thank you, Brad. Thank you. It's been a pleasure. Your patience is much appreciated. And hopefully your guys' patience will be rewarded by this show and further shows as well. For now, we're out of here. Thanks for listening. Take it easy.